Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week we're going to talk about what what plan providers need to do to become an elite retirement plan provider. Being the elite, that's a whole big phrase with all elite wrestling. So a little professional wrestling drop over here. But of course, as always, first things first, it's right around the corner, less than 2 weeks away, that 401k National Virtual Conference. We have a tentative agenda set. You can go and if you got the email, see what's out there in terms of 2 days events. It's expanding a little bit more. I had an hour to both days. But you can see a lot of the presentations. The Retireholics will be there Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern on the 22nd. And on that day, hopefully, we will talk to Congressman Jamie Raskin from Maryland. Unfortunately, he had a family tragedy with his son last week. Hopefully, he will be there. If not, we certainly understand. And then, of course, we have on day two, Doc Gooden. On day one, Thursday, some great presentations, as well as Walt Clyde Frazier. Should be a lot of fun. We've been adding one or two sponsors of late, and so that's why we had to expand. Right now, we are, I think, at 11 to 5:30 on both days. That may go on for a little bit more. We certainly shall see. But the beauty of the event is on Zoom, it will all be recorded. So if you have something pressing and you got to leave, just understand that there will be a video recording that you could get on demand and obviously see what you missed when you got to go to the restroom or have a meeting or go home or whatever it may be. The fun, I think, starts at 11 o'clock Eastern on both days, out of respect to our friends on the West Coast. Hopefully we don't go earlier than that. I think the original plan when I scheduled with Raskin's office, originally was going to speak at 9 a.m., 9:30 Eastern, and thankfully he was able to reschedule for a time later that he could be heard. He'll speak to us for about 15 minutes. I could certainly... Hopefully, we'll be able to talk to them. Of course, go to that 401ksite.com for further information, how you can sign up for just $33.33. You want an autograph, you can pay a little bit more for that. From our guests, Walt Frazier and Dwight Gooden. Should be interesting to talk to Walt. Knicks are looking good. You look at that roster and you say to yourself, how is that possible that that team actually has right now as we speak a winning record? I think they're 4-3. I think it's all because of their coach. That team really knows how to hustle, really knows how to play defense. Really a blue-collar team, as they say, because they got no superstars on that team. And again, like I said, go to that 401ksite.com for further information on how you could sign up and be part of our event. So going back, there are providers out there, retirement plan providers, and they're, what I think are elite retirement plan providers. And I think first things first, the most important part of developing your practice is really to develop a niche. You can't be everything for everybody. I said long ago that when I started my law practice, people say, what kind of clients are you going to handle? And I was very honest. I said, Exxon and Microsoft aren't going to hire me. There are a lot of plan sponsors out there that they're just not going to hire a one-person law firm dealing with retirement plans. When I was at Meyer Swazi, there was a union client that really loved me. And they wanted to hire me once they realized that I was leaving and going somewhere else. And I prepared the retainer letter, and that really would have been a great retainer to have. They paid a quarterly fee. It was a substantial amount of money, a couple of thousand dollars a month. It really would have turned out to. And I sent the retainer letters out for their retirement plan and their welfare benefit plan. And eventually they decided not to hire me. And the only reason they didn't hire me was because I was one person. And, you know, in this business, unfortunately, you have people who think you're going to get hit by a truck tomorrow. And what's going to happen to them if you get hit by a truck? You know, they wanted more of a law firm setting, so they stayed with Meyer Suozzi, and I believe that they left not long after my replacements didn't exactly do a good job as I did. So when I started my practice and developing an itch, the first thing I did was, besides the fact that I was trying to ward off people who thought I was crazy for going on my own, after that, I looked at what I could do and what other risk attorneys would do. You know, other risk attorneys going to charge by the hour. I was going to charge a flat fee. I didn't like the billable hour. I think the billable hour for attorneys is a license to inflate. I looked at my own practice. I looked at, you know, where I worked at law firms. They had fancy offices. You know, I was going to work from home. So if I could work from home, I have a very low overhead. I could be very competitive with my fees. I didn't want to charge for every little conversation that I would have with a client or with an advisor. And that's really a great way of developing relationships. I had an open door policy with advisors and TPAs. They had a question. They, you know, realized that there wasn't going to be a bill attached to every little thing. I mean, I had a TPA recently who, over the last year or so, last couple of years, I've been answering questions left and right from them every now and then. And the guy, because of the holidays, just wanted to write a check and send me a nice little gift, which was nice. And that's what happens. You develop relationships by being out there, open, honest. You know, as a plan provider, you're going to need to figure out, you know, which sector of the marketplace you want to serve and how best you can accomplish that task. And it's important, you know, like I said, I looked at what other risk attorneys were doing, and I said, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to stand out. And I think that, you know, if you're a financial advisor, your TPA, look what the competition is doing and see how you can stand out and offer something different and unique and interesting, because, you know, it's a very competitive marketplace. And any way you could stand out is obviously going to be better. Next, I think it's very important not to be arrogant and to be open and change. And I think we talked, I certainly talked about the scene a few weeks back. There, you know, one of my favorite movies is The Poseidon Adventure. I think the first time I watched it was like, I don't know, 16, 17 years ago. It was on AMC and I caught the part of it and I was just entranced by it. But there's a fantastic scene in the Poseidon Adventure that nobody really talks about. It's when the ship capsizes and they're upside down, and Reverend Scott, who's played by Gene Hackman, is trying to find survivors that will join him in a race to the bottom of the ship for rescue if the ship, you know, if the ship was capsized. You know, the idea was, since we're upside down, any type of rescue was going to come from the bottom of the ship, which was now actually the top. And he felt it made sense that, that you know, they go up. And it was the bursar, who was just annoying as heck, who was saying, you know, stay, help will come. And Reverend Scott got into a fight with the bursar, and he says, you know, don't you understand the logic? I mean, you know, the captain is dead. Anybody below us is dead. And the bursar says, you don't know that, or whatever. So Reverend Scott goes and sees the chaplain. Reverend Scott, at the beginning of the movie, gives a very fiery speech. And the chaplain of the boat, who's played by Arthur O'Connell, I think his name was John, he says, you know, come with us. You know, and the chaplain says he can't. He's not going to abandon others. And Chaplain John was honest. He's like, I know I can't help him, and I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure we're. I think we're all going to likely die. Reverend Scott just doesn't understand that. He asks, you know, Chaplain John, what's it all been for? If he just decides to die, Chaplain John says, you know, I have no other choice. I love that scene. I think of that scene very, very often in life because, you know, my grandmother, who I've always written about a lot and talked about, she always taught me that, you know, she was a Holocaust survivor, and life is the most important thing. When you have a chance to live, you got to go for it. Living is the most important thing. And, you know, I think of that scene often when I think of, weirdly, organizations that I've been involved with, both in business and personal stuff, charitable stuff, and that they just didn't want to change with the times, and they just decided to stay there, like Chaplain John, and just die. You know, whether it was, you know, working for TPAs or a certain law firm that is about half the size that it is now when I left, or a conservative synagogue, there's nothing worse than being part of an organization that is just too arrogant or just unwilling to change. And, you know, these TPAs, this law firm, this conservative synagogue in Rockville Center, you know, I left each of these organizations because I just didn't want to be part of something that was going to be part of a long road down to oblivion. It's like working for Sears. I mean, you know, Eddie Lampert, he had that short time when the stock was moving and doing fantastic because it was a real estate ploy, but that was 2007. And ever since then, Sears has been on this long road to bankruptcy, to liquidation. And you could just see it a mile away. And that's how I feel about a lot of organizations. You have to be open to change. You know, working for a TPA that was built on not revealing revenue sharing to their clients, or, you know, the law firm that, you know, the managing attorney, Lois, was scoffing at social media. You just knew, like I said, a mile away that the arrogance and the stubbornness and the ways they were, you know, entrenched in was going to be the end of them. You know, Lois, and I talk about it ad nauseum because, you know, I got to deal with my insecurities. You know, the managing attorney, she was so damn arrogant. She had such disdain for social media. She says, oh, yeah, her husband was an attorney. And she's like, my husband does that. And just like the tone of her voice suggested that she thought that it was beneath him as an attorney to do that. And, you know, I think he's still in practice, doing very well, and she's like now of counsel, having destroyed that law firm. It's 40% smaller. They closed 2 out of their 5 locations, and I could see that 10 years ago. Now I only wish, you know, I could know next week's Powerball numbers. I never can do that. I could make predictions, but nothing that can actually financially benefit me. But we saw that in the retirement plan business. You know, the retirement plan providers that were going to do well after fee disclosure regulations were implemented back in 2012 were the ones that offered it before, you know, they had to. You know, there were so many large providers, especially some large insurance companies. We're not going to name names. They have exited the business in the last 8 years. We just had a transaction close about a week ago. There were so many people that just decided, you know what, we can't, you know, we're cashing out. We just can't deal with it. They're very honest. And then there are some, obviously, some plan providers that just went out of business that couldn't sell out to a larger provider. Next on my list on how to become an elite provider is obviously finding good employees and keeping them. I always feel that, you know, unfortunately, one of the biggest problems with consolidation in this business is the fact that, you know, a lot of people are let go, as the acquiring company is obviously going to eliminate any redundant positions in a new consolidated company. It's a way to cut down on costs. The problem is that while there are many free agents out there that have lost their jobs, the fact is that there are very few good employees to choose from, even with so many people placed on waivers. Good help in the retirement plan business is really hard to come by. A lot of the reason is that, for the most part, a lot of people just don't get the good training that they need. And the problem with training is if you have administrators or other types of, employees, they don't get the training from the beginning. They never get any better. I worked at TPAs where you had somebody, a 401k administrator for 15 years experience, and they were terrible. One of the most important assets as a retirement plan provider is the quality, is quality employees. Because, like I said, good and experienced employees in this business are really difficult to find, and they're, it's a really hard thing to manage. It's important that you recruit and retain top-notch employees, because turnover in your ranks gets you away from concentrating and growing your business. It's just a distraction. Turning a turnover process in your employees, it requires resources. You got to hire new employees, sign them up, getting them trained, getting them acclimated to your way of doing things. And, you can avoid turnover by paying people a decent wage and making sure that they're appreciated. People are people. People have feelings. You need to understand that. Once you understand that, you're a long way. I mean, you're not a long way. You're on the road to really becoming an elite provider. Next, it's all about relationships. I always know that. I worked with Richard Lorita. I've talked it ad nauseum. Richard was a salesperson that I worked with for quite a long time, almost 10 years, at two TPA shops. And he was the one who really taught me that, it's a relationship-driven business. While it's national in scope, it's really close-knit. People across the country may be aware of what you're doing, which could be good or bad, depending on what you're doing. A few weeks back, I learned of a client that needed a new salesperson, and when I reached to a friend of mine who's a DCIO rep, that DCIO guy already knew of the vacancy, because again, he's somebody that is well respected and loved, and he's obviously going to be contacted about what's going on in the business. I always feel that, building relationships with other good quality plan providers is going to really help grow your retirement plan business. Building relationships is about relationships. It isn't about selling your services from the get-go. It's all about building trust with other plan providers and building your reputation. So there's nothing more annoying, and I wrote about it, where I got a LinkedIn invitation from a financial advisor in New York. And all he wants to do is sell me his financial services. And he says, "Oh, I see you're doing great things in the legal services business, or legal service providing." So he didn't even know what type of lawyer I was, or, sounded like my wife, who jokingly, or not jokingly, says, "I still don't know what Ari does for a living as an ERISA attorney." It's all about building relationships. That advisor was not interested in building relationships. He was interested in selling me stuff. And when you're an ERISA attorney for 22 years now, almost 11 years on my own, needless to say, I know quite a few financial advisors. And if I did need one, I was certainly going to hire somebody that I worked with for a long time, one way or another. And it's just aggravating. And I don't know how that works. Just today, I get a LinkedIn invitation with somebody who wants to sell me their tax accounting services. And it's not like they're interested in knowing about me. They're just, if you want to cut down on your work, and I'm like, please. Realize that, my best relationships in the retirement plan business, I always look to an advisor like James Holland. James Holland called me like 10 years ago, based on some LinkedIn posts. And he was talking to me on the phone. I'll never forget when he called me that first time. I'm an ERISA attorney. He knew what I was doing. I didn't have to say, who's your ERISA attorney? Can I sell you ERISA legal services? When they need me, they'll call me. And if I had clients to refer him, I would. But that would be, you know, I didn't talk to him one day, and then the next day I referred him business. I developed a relationship, and relationships require trust and requires time. And so many people on LinkedIn and so many people in the retirement plan business don't realize that. You know, I know these people. I know James Holland for 10, 11 years. I know Lyle Himbaugh for 13 years. I think it's going to be 13 years in 2021. These are people I trust. These are people that I've worked with. The TPAs that I've worked with in the past. I've known some of their salespeople ever since, you know, when I first started out as an ERISA attorney 22 years ago. That takes time, it takes relationships, and it's important to realize that, you know, relationships are such a big part of building a practice. Next on my list, communication is key, whether it's, you know, updating your clients, talking to employees, or talking to other plan providers. Communication is obviously key. It's got to be understandable. It needs to be frequent. Silence, you know, maybe a great silence may be golden with your kids at home, but it's a lack of gold for you as a retirement plan provider. You're out of sight. You're out of mind. I think it's important to connect, but connect on a level that, you know, your audience is going to understand. I learned, you know, talking about developing your niche again, I learned a long time ago that as an ERISA attorney, I would have to write in English, not write legal treatises, I'm sorry, or essays, or, you know, I didn't have to justify my fees by speaking in ERISA-ese. I could justify my fees by speaking in English, and that's, again, that's another thing that really helped build my practice. And talk about another thing that helped build my practice and that could certainly help a retirement plan provider become elite is marketing, marketing, and marketing. I will always say that the problem with most retirement plan provider marketing is that it sucks. I still, to this day, I don't understand why the word sucks is a problem. Oh, you can't say that. And I remember, I think I was in the fifth grade, and the Islanders, who, you know, I don't like. They were playing the Oilers in the Stanley Cup. And I remember we were talking about them, and that was in 83 when the Oilers got swept. They won the cup by beating the Islanders in 84, but in 83 they got swept. And I remember with my day school principal, they were talking about the Stanley Cup. Oh, I'm like, I said, oh, all the Oilers, they suck. And, you know, Dr. Ron, the principal, thought, you know, I said a curse word. I mean, I don't think the word sucks is a curse word, but I think people who say that it is have their mind wanders somewhere else, but that's neither here nor there. While, you know, most retirement plan provider marketing sucks, you know, I think that I've been lucky that I don't think I need a marketing guru, and I'm sure that there are marketing gurus who say the opposite. I just find that they would say the opposite. I had a marketing guru say one time, I don't know why you post that stuff. Whatever. You know, article, you know, my article writings and whatnot is really, again, a big component of building my business, providing, you know, free retirement plan advice to sponsors, providers, whatever. You know, that has helped as well. Again, most plan provider marketing isn't very good. And I'm not a jealous person, but I will always say that I am jealous of J.D. Carlson and his gang at Plan Design Consultants for their Retireholics video casts. I don't know how much business they get out of that. I really don't care because I don't like to count other people's money. I think that's disrespectful. But I will say, I think that their stuff is ingenious. And there's always going to be people who will say that, you know, I'm not going to use those guys because they have a video cast where they're talking about beer and it really looks unprofessional. You got one guy wearing a robe with advertising patches, but it's hilarious, but it's memorable, and it has really given them a platform, and I think that you're going to get a bigger audience than the prudes that you've annoyed and pushed away because you did that. You know, it goes back to, you know, when the reason I really like JD and the Plain Design Consultants is the Retireholics video. It's something that I appreciate because I was the guy, I remember I was the first year of law school, and we had a moot court competition, and the second years would grade us. And at that time, before I met my wife, I had a very eclectic or obnoxious or loud ties. My mother would go to, you know, Marshall's or Daffy Dan's, which doesn't exist anymore, and buy these like cartoon ties. And I think I had like a Looney Tunes tie or something like that. It was the Flintstones tie. I've written about it. I should remember that. And the second year law student, you know, criticizing, you know, my argument of a case, and then he's talking about the Fakakta Flintstones tie, and what the heck does that have to do with anything? It's the same thing. One time I had to argue in front of a village court on behalf of my father on a ticket he got. It was a moving violation. And, you know, I was, you know, playing, I was doing golf. I was taking golf lessons, and I think I was wearing a polo, and the judge had to make a snide comment, something about the TV show Ed or whatever. There are always going to be people that are not going to like how you put yourself out there. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't like me because I'm very very opinionated. And as I said on a Retireholics episode, I'm the turd in the punch bowl. And, you know, with marketing at times, you will offend a segment of the population. It is what it is. I remember years ago, I think I wrote an article about the fiduciary warranty, and I made mention of the F word. Like, the F word in the article was the fiduciary, and it was joking the F word and the F word being fiduciary, and I think somebody wrote me back, I'm offended by that. I didn't actually use the F word in the article, except the F word being fiduciary, but not that other F word. But, you know, again, JD and his group have really dynamic marketing. I think it's a really amazing stuff, and my hat's off to them, if I was wearing a hat at the time. But I think the lesson to be learned is that really, if you don't have a background in marketing, there's so many marketing gurus out there that do. And, you know, obviously hire somebody whose practice is retirement plan marketing. A lot of good marketing people out there. And if they don't know anything about the retirement plan business, they're a terrible fit. You know, I many years ago when I first started, I had a PR guy. He just didn't understand what I did. And I had to let him go. He was terrible. You know, he's saying, oh, you know, I have another client. They're criminal law attorneys. Oh, you can, why don't you guys meet? They're referrals. I'm like, Ron, I'm not going to get referrals for ERISA retirement services from criminal law attorneys. Their clients aren't going to set up plans. So it's important on the marketing aspect, dynamic marketing. If you can't do it yourself, there are plenty of people that could do it for you. And again, hire somebody that has experience in the retirement plan business. Quite a few people, I can think of four or five people already out there that just devote to retirement plan provider marketing. And these are the people, in my opinion, that you should certainly hire if you need the help. So that concludes this episode of That 401k Podcast. Go to that401ksite.com for further information. You've got articles and whatnot. But, of course, that 401k National Virtual Conference, $33.33 to sign up. And thank you for joining with me, and I hope you join with me again next week. Thanks. Bye.